When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
They are Sports Illustrated.
It's amazing.
This incredible body of work.
I really appreciate the integrity.
Everything you do is well done.
You guys do a great job.
We love it. What can we say?
He's Chris Mannix.
He's employed by Sports Illustrated.
The announcer's got it in for me.
There you go.
This is the Crossover NBA Podcast.
If you have a problem with it, build a team that can beat them.
Hosted by the one and only.
Oh, thank God.
Thank God.
Chris Mannix.
All right, welcome back to another episode of the Crossover NBA Podcast. A lot to get into this week. The ever-developing story with the NBA in China. LeBron James, he got involved in a situation this week. We'll talk about that. Also, Zion Williamson, the hype is at its peak. Great preseason for Zion. What does that mean about his future? And the next big thing, is it LaMelo Ball? Starting to hear a lot of buzz about the youngest Ball brother playing overseas. We're going to get into all that and much more. Joining me here on the podcast, back in studio, SI-NBA writer, draft analyst, guru, Jeremy Wu. What's up, Jeremy?
Hey, man. I think just ready for the season like everybody else. It's kind of exciting. We're kind of on the cusp now, and we can stop talking about all this other stuff and just watch basketball, which would be nice.
Yeah, we can. We at some point we will. I'm not sure we're quite at that point yet where we can stop talking about this craziness. Before we begin, though, I want to thank everybody that showed up for the live tour. We went through Boston, D.C., Brooklyn. It was terrific, terrific audience, terrific shows, terrific guests. If you miss any of those shows, they're all up on the Crossover podcast feed. The live pods were great. I thought the audio came out pretty well. So looking forward to doing it again at some point down the line. All right, so let's jump into this NBA China conversation. And looking back at the week that was, before we get into some of the stuff that was said in the last 24 hours, I haven't had a chance to really weigh on this on the podcast. I wrote a little bit about it on SI.com. I did some TV stuff over the course of the week, but let me ask you, Jeremy, how the NBA handled this controversy, which began with Daryl Morey tweeting his support for the Hong Kong freedom movement and continued throughout the course of the week with one statement from the NBA, a stronger statement with Adam Silver, China responding by pulling Rockets games off of Tencent, by severing its ties with the Houston Rockets, by criticizing the NBA for its willingness to stand by Daryl Morey. What were your overall takeaways from the last week or so with how this went down?
Just what a mess, man. Really, what a mess. At this point, it's just like, you know, I thought Silver did a good job of handling it for the most part. You know, he's a smart guy. You know, I know that he, you know, isn't going to do anything without thinking about all the consequences. And, you know, obviously doing anything to Daryl would have been probably out of the question, right? I mean, that sends totally the wrong message. And no matter what, it's a lose-lose situation. So, I mean, from the league standpoint, it's not great. I think they would love for it to go away. That's probably the biggest thing. If they can, it's not going to happen, though. And that's the problem. And I think for me, that's the interesting thing just going into this season. I mean, now players are going to be asked about it all year. I mean, that's probably the immediate fallout, right? I mean, this is something that, you know, as things unfold over there, you know, it's such a public thing now. It's going to be a topic. You know, there are Chinese reporters, you know, in the States. I mean, you know, all these things are happening. And, you know, it's such a bad situation and not enough people. I mean, players, coaches, media, America in general. I mean, it's not something that people are that well versed in. And, it's, you know, it's been sort of, I mean, if anything, what Daryl said is now bringing it to the forefront, right? It's even more of a story. But, you know, from a business perspective, I think the league would love for it to go away. But, you know, all they can do is wait and, you know, we'll see if that actually is what happens. I'm not confident that it goes away anytime soon.
Yeah, I thought that they did a pretty good job after a really bad first statement. I mean, the first statement was, and I've used this phrase before, kind of a word salad of remarks. It began with the use of the word regrettable, which I thought was just the wrong word in that context, because I don't think you should be calling any reaction based on somebody's comments like that regrettable. And then the way that they phrased the statement that they support their players, coaches, executives, whatnot, making what educated statements on this, I felt that kind of intimated that Daryl's statement wasn't educated. And I don't believe that it wasn't educated. I believe it was educated. I think Daryl Morey knew exactly what he was saying when he put out that statement of support. So the NBA, after fumbling it a little bit, they came back pretty strongly. And my argument in my defense of the NBA after that second statement, after that Silver press conference, was there's only so much they can do. I mean, I don't expect the NBA to, you know, come out publicly in support of Hong Kong. I don't expect them to come out publicly in the same way in support of, like, the Ukraine. Like, they're not a political body that should have to weigh in on all these issues. What they could do, and what they did do ultimately, was say, we're not going to stop or sanction anyone associated with the league for making statements like this. It's just not what we're going to get into. We've kind of opened this can of worms by allowing players and coaches to say whatever they want about United States political figures. I mean, Greg Popovich once called President Trump a soulless coward. I mean, LeBron called him a bum. You've seen the NBA step in and take the All-Star game away from Charlotte in 2016 because they didn't like a bathroom bill that was passed. So they opened this box, and now they have to kind of live with the consequence. And I thought Adam Silver did a nice job by saying, you know, we are going to live with the fallout from it. We are going to live with the consequence. They may be severe, though it doesn't look like they're going to be as severe as initially feared. But, you know, the NBA at least acknowledged that they didn't have any choice in this matter. This is kind of what they've allowed their players, coaches, executives to be. And if it winds up affecting their bottom line, it's just kind of the way it is.
Yeah, exactly. And it's sort of interesting because on one hand, maybe it's not fair to, you know, to treat the NBA that much differently than any other billion-dollar entity that operates in China, right? I mean, if you just think about it from a, you know, bigger standpoint, I mean, there's everyone is doing business over there. Everyone has economic interests in terms of, you know, production or sales or whatever it is, right? I mean, it's a global thing. It's a global economy. But it's just, this is at the forefront of public discourse. Now it's sort of weirdly become the center of the whole story, right, in some ways. And again, in China, I think is just, they're trying to remind everybody who's in control. You know, that's what they're doing. They're going to go for the harshest response they can. And, you know, we'll see if it eventually moves back in towards the middle, which is usually what happens in these situations, right? Like, I don't think it's like some death blow for the Rockets business, right? But it is going to be an interesting thing to monitor over the course of the year, especially as the situation unfolds over there, right?
And look, the NBA, they want the Chinese money, but it's not like they're going to go out of business if they don't have the Chinese money. My understanding is that basketball-related income last year was over like $7 billion. The Chinese money accounts for like $300 million of it. Now, that's not unsubstantial, but it's not, you know, incredibly consequential when you look at how the NBA does it. I know there was some reporting about how the, you know, there were you know, executives out there, you know, looking at what the salary cap structure could be, the luxury tax structure, and it could be, what, 10 to 15%. I hadn't heard that. And I asked a number of different people that would have knowledge of something like that. And I don't think, there just wasn't a fear that the Chinese, you know, the exodus of Chinese money would affect the bottom line. Not from the people that I talked to about this. Pretty knowledgeable people in this sphere. So, yeah, it's kind of like that, and I use this line on TV, like the Gordon Gekko line. Like, how many yachts does an owner need to jet ski behind, or players need to jet ski behind? I mean, it's extra money, but it doesn't affect the fact that the NBA is an incredibly lucrative league for everybody that's involved in it. So I think they did what they had to do, and it does sound like things are settling down. But I would say this, and I wrote this and said this last week, that we don't know where this story goes when the heavy hitters get involved. And we saw Donald Trump get involved, and he kind of criticized Steve Kerr, but was remarkably, you know, less than critical on Greg Popovich, which I thought was noteworthy in and of itself. But, you know, that didn't exactly, you know, take the story to another level. But what did take it to another level was LeBron James. And LeBron, in his first comments since coming back from China, he had this to say about the situation that he just experienced in China.
I don't want to get into a word or sentence feud with Daryl. With Daryl Morey, but I believe he wasn't educated on the situation at hand, and he spoke, and so many people could have been harmed, not only financially but physically, emotionally, spiritually. So just be careful what we tweet and we say and what we do, even though, yes, we do have freedom of speech, but there can be a lot of negative that comes with that, too.
All right, so now LeBron definitely took the story to another level there and opened himself up for all kinds of criticism. Now, in the aftermath of those comments, he went on Twitter and said that he was more being critical of the timing of it all and Daryl Morey being unaware, uneducated on the consequences of what he would say, not necessarily the substance of what he would say. But that was shocking to me, Jeremy, that he would go that route. And I knew the second he said that, that was going to become a huge story over the subsequent days.
Yeah, the thing with LeBron is too, that I think by now he's been in the league for so long, we're so familiar with sort of how he operates. You kind of have to assume now that anything he says with the camera on him has at least some degree of calculation with it, right? So LeBron is not somebody who's just going to like speak off the cuff on impulse. Like, I think he understands his role as a public figure by now. I don't think it's fair for him to, you know, to assume otherwise, right? I mean, he's done this, you know, he's had this platform to speak on all tons of stuff and he's done it. He's not afraid to do it. So the thing is, though, he definitely miscalculated on this. Just throwing Daryl under the bus here just was not the right move. And I unwittingly, he put himself in a bad spot now, and he can't really walk it back either, right? I mean, you know, LeBron is often a sort of a firebrand for people to talk about whatever issue they want to talk about and yell about it. And that's just sort of, you know, how social media works, how TV works now, for better or worse. But it's almost like the way, with what he said, it was almost like he was trying to create like a moral high ground here. But that was not the right route, I don't think. I mean, like, to say that it was uneducated and then you're trying to make a point about how, you know, words can impact others, but at the same time, he's kind of tucking his own tail with respect to, you know, there are people on the other side of the planet who are, you know, living this struggle that he definitely doesn't know about enough to talk about, right? So, you know, it's not like, I don't think LeBron was trying to score points for China, right? And obviously, you know, with Nike, there's financial interest there, but I don't think that's what he was trying to do. And I get that it was a tough week for the Lakers and the Nets and all the players who had to go over there and answer these questions. And I think, you know, that's the first answer for him to take and say, hey, you know, we were in a bad spot, because that's true. But in the context of Morey, you know, he would have been better not saying anything at all. And it's a little bit ironic, right, talking about when to speak, when not to speak, and then sort of showing your own sort of lack of foresight with the issue. That's sort of how I felt about it.
Yeah, I really don't know what he was trying to accomplish with those comments.
No.
I mean, I have two thoughts on this. One is that I don't care if players choose not to speak out on issues that they're not well-versed on. And you know, an issue like Hong Kong and China is probably not something that most NBA players have even thought about, you know, at any point in time, despite the fact it's been in the news, you know, for the better part the last 3 or 4 months. So I have no problem with it. I don't think just because they comment on social issues in the United States, it obligates them to talk about social issues and freedom issues and human rights issues worldwide. If you don't have a strong opinion on it, I don't think you have to come out and create one. And most of the social issues that these players speak out on now are stuff they've experienced, you know, whether it's police brutality or police violence or, you know, things that go on in the inner cities or anything, and racism. I think this is stuff that they've experienced firsthand, so they have strong opinions about it. And I have no problem with them continuing to take stands on that stuff, even if they don't take stands on something like this. But I know LeBron walked it back, but I don't know how you do that. Like, that, the statement pretty much spoke for itself. I mean, he said, you know, not informed, not educated on all this. I mean, to me, listening to that statement, he was not talking about the consequences. He was talking about Daryl Morey saying something that maybe Daryl Morey wasn't fully versed on. And I disagree with that. I don't know at this point what Daryl's motives were for making a statement like this. I don't know if he knows people in Hong Kong or just in that moment something had happened that caused him to put that tweet out there. But I don't think for a second that Daryl doesn't know exactly what's going on between Hong Kong and China. In addition to being a pretty smart guy, I mean, he's Northwestern and MIT educated. He's also been the general manager of a team that is as connected to China as any team in the NBA because of the history with Yao Ming. So I think Daryl knew exactly what he was talking about. And that's not a good look for LeBron to say that, because when he says something like that, it does make you think, all right, well, he's willing to talk about issues that don't affect his bottom line, but issues that do affect his bottom line, he's, you know, criticizing and going after. I agree with you. I think he would have been better off just saying nothing and being like, look, that's, you know, I forget what the question was exactly, but I think it was the NBA's response to all this. I think he would have said, look, it's fine. It's a complicated issue. I hope things are worked out peacefully amongst all sides. To take it to that level, I just don't know how you kind of walk that back. And even if you comment on it later, I don't know how that's believable that you weren't saying exactly what everybody thought you were going to say.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, like, as a reporter, you know, I always hate to try to, you know, hold players or whoever to a standard that I wouldn't hold myself answering a question, right? Like, you know, we always hope, you know, you ask guys, you hope they're going to get a good answer. But, you know, also if you put yourself in the shoes of the players here, I mean, it's tough to know what you'd say, right? I mean, if you're put on the spot, imagine being a rookie and put in the spot, right? So, you know, LeBron, you know, isn't obviously, you know, he's done this. He's gone through the media gauntlet. And, you know, now I think the problem now is it's all season. It's going to, he almost invited it back. Like, there was a chance maybe this would go away for a little bit. Now it's, you know, it's all over again. It's blown up again. And I think he had to know that was going to happen. And going about it the way he did, you know, and again, it's not like Daryl was wrong to say what he said. I mean, again, maybe he shouldn't have said it from the business standpoint. You know, maybe think about it. Maybe don't tweet it. Maybe, you know, find another way to do it. But it's not like he was wrong, like morally wrong either. So I don't know, man. I mean, it just shows. I mean, it's such a tricky thing to talk about for us over here as Americans too, just not knowing everything we need to know. And, you know, we can't hold the players to this different standard. I mean, I don't know everything. And so, you know, we can't ask everybody to be an expert. But you got to know when to know you don't know. And that's probably what I wish and what I wish LeBron would have done in that situation.
Yeah, and look, I mean, he knew that question was coming for like a week. So yeah. That's what's the most startling on it, because he knew what was coming, and that was still his answer. This is one of the most cerebral players in the NBA and a guy that knows the power and impact of his words, and he still went out there and said it. And look, as I said, I don't expect him to be versed on the issue. Look, it took me, you know, an hour of research plus a long conversation with a Obama deputy national security advisor to really understand exactly what was going on. And once I did, my own opinion was I didn't think Daryl was wrong. I think what's going on over there is a serious issue and something that should be, look, U.S. policy has long been to support, you know, what Hong Kong is looking for. So I don't think Daryl said anything that's, you know, at all that controversial necessarily to people in the United States. But to say that he wasn't educated or informed, I just thought that was a little bit crazy. So that's, you know, it's probably going to die down in the next couple of weeks. We'll move on to, you know, his relationship with Frank Vogel, I'm sure, for some kind of, you know, basketball craziness. But that was surprising. You know, he had an opportunity to kind of, you know, say his piece and quell the storm, and he didn't. He took a tack that was a little bit different. So it was a little bit crazy to me. All right, let's talk some basketball here with what's going on in New Orleans right now. The Zion Williamson hype train is officially out of control at this point. Zion having an incredible preseason, averaging like 23 points through his first four games, shooting something like 70%+ from the floor. I watched that Bulls game that was nationally broadcast. He was just scoring in the paint whenever he wanted to. Now, the Bulls' defense stinks, and I saw him doing it against, you know, Luke Kornet and Lowry Market, and not exactly, you know, Rudy Gobert out there. But it was impressive watching Zion do everything that he did in that preseason game and another preseason games. You've covered Zion all last year at Duke. You wrote something about him earlier this week. What's your takeaway from Zion Williamson's preseason start?
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, you said, you know, it's not like watching him do it against Rudy Gobert, and you're right. And then he did it against Rudy Gobert, like literally, like took it to him. You know, and so for me,
yeah,
you know, obviously I've watched him a lot, and you know, I watched that game against Utah, and you know, that was kind of when I was like, oh man, like this is a thing now, because it's again, it's one thing to be at Duke, you know, beating up on the ACC, you know, bullying past guys who don't have, you know, the same caliber of athleticism and strength, but then seeing Zion sort of play the same style, you know, he's not changing his style, he's doing what he does, and he's doing it against NBA bodies. I mean, that's, you know, happening really soon. And so I think we probably had to reframe, and that's sort of what I wrote this week. I mean, it just, you kind of have to reframe how you're thinking about it. It's hard not to get excited about, you know, what he can do. I mean, he's shooting 75-80% from the field right now, and you know, he's not going to do that all season, but I mean, again, what he did in college was unprecedented. I forget what he shot, but it was like 60-something. I think it was like 71 on twos or something. And I mean, it's just hard to put a ceiling on how efficient he can be, just sort of knowing the way he plays, assuming he's healthy. And so it's a really scary baseline to sort of start his career, but it's happening. So, you know, we can't really put the cat back in the bag here, right?
You know what I liked about watching him in a couple of those games was that, you know, he's just a great finisher. And I don't think I realized just how good a finisher he was outside of the dunk. I mean, that's kind of what you look for with Zion, like some kind of emphatic dunk like he had in that one summer league game that he played in. But, you know, he has like kind of a natural, you know, selection of moves around the basket, mm-hmm. whether it's an up and under move or using his body well. And, you know, I think you wrote this, eventually you're going to see him start to get a lot of the calls that come with being a player of his size and his significance.
Yep.
Those kind of superstar calls that he's ultimately going to start to get. And once he gets those, I think he's going to get to the free throw line a lot. And that's going to only add to his ability to produce for teams out there. I mean, for the Pelicans, rather. I mean, he's just that good at creating contact and scoring around the rim. Not just with that dunk, but the up and unders. And the passing, too. Like, he mm-hmm. showed some deftness with his ability to move the ball, and I was really impressed with that.
Yeah, you know, he's always been, and I've watched him. I watched him a couple times in high school, you know, and then at Duke and now. And the constant with him that's always impressed me is just how advanced his feel is. He's not someone who chucks up shots. He knows his limits. He knows what's sufficient, and he knows what he can get away with. And again, yeah, he is such a good finisher. He can finish with both hands. He uses the glass. He has touch. And he kind of can feel out where the defense is. So it's not just a matter of, hey, I'm going to go dunk on you. Because if you watch these games, too, it's not what he's doing. And that's almost encouraging, right? I mean, people have been comparing Zion to Blake Griffin a little bit, but Blake came into the league, he was trying to dunk on everybody. And that's not what Zion,
I don't think,
right?
I don't think I saw one dunk in that Duke era in the Bulls game. I don't think I saw one dunk,
you know,
from
again,
there.
He goes up and he's patient. You know, he knows he can hang in the air. He knows that if he initiates the contact, he's going to have space most of the time because he's stronger than these guys already. So it's something else, man. And also, if you watch sort of the way that the Pelicans have gotten him involved, it's smart. I mean, they're getting him, you know, catching the ball on handoffs, going downhill already. They're eliminating the need for him to create something off the dribble, which he can do. He's done it a couple times, you know, a little in and out, get into the paint, whatever. And they're getting him these little short catch situations where it's just one step, boom, he's exploding to the rim. And again, once he's in the air, you can't really do anything about it. You're going to either foul him or he's going to get a good look at the basket. So, I mean, the question is, how sustainable is this going to be? You know, can you keep him healthy? What type of weight is the optimal weight for him to play at? Is he done growing? I mean, there are all these things. He's 19, and it's hard to know what the answer is. But obviously, a very promising start.
What do you think the best position is for him? I mean, look, the NBA has become kind of positionless basketball, but when you're looking at kind of the way to best exploit mismatches with him, where do you think he's better suited, with another, you know, 7-foot big man alongside him, or, you know, playing kind of a quasi five with a space four alongside him?
Yeah. So before last season, before the college season started, I think I wrote that five might end up being his best, like, long term position. And I don't necessarily disagree with that. Like, you know, four versus five, like you said, very malleable now. It's hard to really say what's what. I mean, you know, teams will use two bigs, but the types of bigs you combine can go all different sorts of ways, and what we traditionally think of as the four and the five shifts. But I mean, you do need spacing around him, I think. I think that much is clear, especially right now. And, you know, what they've been doing with him has been successful with Nicolo Melli, you know, helping to, you know, create that space for him to drive. And, you know, I don't think Derek Favors is long term necessarily the best fit next to him. But again, it's like, as long as you can do it for stretches, that's fine. The reason why I wouldn't say they can really go super small with him at the five is like a true five. And say you put like Ingram at the four or whoever, you can't really do that because defensively right now, you know, that's the most glaring thing is he's not really up to speed defending ball screens. You know, that's going to be an adventure, I think, to start the season. Eventually he'll get there. He's a smart player. He's a smart guy. But, you know, defensively it's hard to say whether he can really stay on the floor at the center. But again, if he's that efficient offensively, it might not matter. And if you put four shooters around him, you know that he's going to have space to go, you know, do what he does. So as far as optimizing him, I mean, that's the answer. The question is just how long can you do it right now and, you know, to what end? But I think that much is obvious, just seeing what he can do already.
Yeah, I think another question, too, is just how much of a shooter does he have to become to be really effective in mm-hmm. the NBA? I saw a couple of Bulls players bite on pump fakes from beyond the three-point line. I'm looking at him like, what are you doing? Like, if he wants to shoot that, like, let him fire away out there. I mean, that is something I'd imagine he still has to prove on a regular basis. And as we get into the regular season and he start going up against smarter defenses and better players, certainly, that aren't in preseason mode, I would guess that you're going to get teams playing him way off, like just treating him like, just like a non-shooting big man from out there until he proves that he can do it at a high level, isn't it? Wouldn't you say that's probably the way they're going
to
go?
Yeah, I think you have to at least try that. I mean, to be clear, I mean, it's not like he's Ben Simmons. We're not talking about a guy who's afraid to shoot. You know, he did shoot threes at Duke. He made a respectable amount of the threes he took. He's not taking contested shots, right? It's not like we've got Zion like shooting step backs or, you know, pulling up off the dribble and wild fadeaway shots. Like that's not his game, and he knows that, so that helps, right? It's not like he's like a risk to suddenly go rogue and, you know, be inefficient like that. But yeah, I mean, I think you do have to try sagging off. I mean, New Orleans will do what they can to make it. That's not even an issue, right? I mean, you've already seen they want to get him, like I said, moving downhill. But he should be shooting it at least, to keep people honest. And if he does hit even like 30% of the threes as a rookie, I mean, like, I don't think that's crazy. And if he does that, it's going to be hard to know what to do with him. And the other thing is, you know, if you do sag off him and you give him space to take a dribble and get downhill at you, and he's so explosive that he can still take advantage of you like that. So, again, it's not, we haven't really seen a guy who plays the way he plays with his level of strength and athleticism at such a young age. I mean, people are going to compare him to LeBron, which is dumb, but even LeBron at 19 was not the same type of body that Zion has right now, right? I mean, LeBron was skinny when he came in, put on weight over time. Zion, it's the opposite. He's huge, and, you know, it's going to be how does his body change over the next 5 or 6 years? I'm really kind of fascinated to see.
Oh, he's going to become just extremely well-built. I mean, nobody gains weight or gains the kind of muscle in that first year, but I mean, think about what Giannis looked like in his first year in the NBA. I mean, Giannis was a string bean back then when he came over from Greece, and he was only 18, 19 years old, but the way he's filled out, I mean, he has become just a monster going to the paint. I would imagine that Zion, who is already, you know, much better built than most NBA rookies, is going to become just a physical force once he starts hitting the weight room in these off seasons over the next 2 or 3 years. I think that's a foregone conclusion. And look, if he can hit 30% from three, that's going to make him a factor. I agree with you. I mean, I think the Bucks would love it if Giannis hit 30-35% from three, 30-31% from three even. That, you know, he took a dip last year, but if he gets that number above 30%, he's that much more dangerous. So if that's what the teams are still going to give Zion that shot, but if he's making it at that kind of clip, I mean, they're going to have to defend that at some point. And look, Zion Williamson is also the best thing to happen to Lonzo Ball. I mean, I'm watching Lonzo just, you know, run on the floor and just finding Zion with these lobs and these bounce passes, and Zion's going to contribute to the resurgence, I think, of Lonzo Ball as well. I mean, Lonzo, a lot of the shine came off him last year and the last couple of years, really, you know, with the Lakers, but I think he has the chance to get back into that upper echelon of NBA point guard, just playing in that offense and playing alongside a big like Zion.
Yeah, you know, and really the Pelicans on whole, I mean, the way that Alvin Gentry wants to play, I mean, obviously we know what he likes to do. He's been doing it for a long time with Phoenix, and he wants to play fast, and what he does is going to amplify. I mean, Lonzo and Zion in particular are going to be amplified by that philosophy, right? I mean, part of why I was so sort of in love with Zion as a college player is just that he never really had to dominate the game. What he does is he dominates the margins of the game, where it's, you know, he'll make a play in transition. He'll get you in a transition. He'll grab it off the glass and get you a 2-on-1. I mean, he does all these little things, and they all facilitate efficient scoring. And, you know, generally, you're getting a good transition look. It's an efficient shot, right? So, you know, Lonzo, I think, sort of is wired the same way. You know, he's unselfish. He's going to move the ball. I think he'll shoot better because he'll get more open shots. In L.A., I think that was an issue. And, it's going to be interesting to see I think part of the ceiling for New Orleans this season is just going to be how well do these guys shoot, because, you know, the numbers don't say Lonzo and Ingram are great shooters, but, you know, I've seen those guys hit shots in the past. They're not non-shooters, right? So it's just where do they land in the middle of those outcomes? I mean, they've got Redick, who we can rely on, right? But I mean, oh, yeah, overall, I mean, both those guys are, I think, in great positions to have a good year. I think Ingram is in position to have a good season as well. And I mean, it could be, I mean, sneakily, it could be a playoff team if all those guys sort of take a step, which I think is possible.
Yeah, I think it could be a playoff team too. I mean, I wonder if they hit kind of a wall, especially Zion at some point, like most rookies do. And, you know, can Brandon Ingram stay healthy for an entire season? Lonzo as well. I mean, that's the same with any team out there staying healthy. But if they do, they're going to score a lot of points. And I think they've got enough veterans on that roster, kind of headlined by Redick, that maybe they can stay in it and make some noise, and that would be a pretty big accomplishment coming off the year that they just had. All right, speaking of Lonzo Ball, LaMelo Ball, the youngest member of the Ball family, he's starting to make some noise playing over in the NBL in Australia. This was a guy that, you know, when he went to, what was it, Lithuania, you know, everybody kind of looked at those numbers and said, what were they? Then he plays in that league, that LeVar Ball, the Junior Basketball Association, and everybody kind of looked at those numbers and said, whatever. But the last, month or so, what he's doing in the NBL and how his body's starting to fill out, there's starting to be a lot of buzz about LaMelo Ball to the point where he's being talked about maybe as the number one pick in next year's draft. Where do you stand on LaMelo Ball and what you've seen from him and the evolution of him really over the last year?
Yeah, so I did get a chance to actually see him play in August. I was out in LA at a couple of Nike had the Nike Academy scouting event. So they did their championship game, that event for a lot of these top high school guys. It was at the Drew League playoffs. And so LaMelo, spent, the summer playing in the Drew League, which, if you don't know, it's the big LA Pro-Am. A lot of pros will play in it. Not necessarily the highest level of competition, but, you are playing against competitive grown men. And, LaMelo played in that league. And so I hung around for like 5 hours. I went and took a nap in my car. I was pacing around the gym. I was waiting for his game because I was just like, I got to see him play. Because, I hadn't seen him play since he was really a freshman in high school, when he was really should have been an eighth grader, and he was playing on the same team as Lonzo and LiAngelo at Chino Hills. And so now, he's legit now. He's shot up. I mean, he's now 6'6", 6'7", legitimately. I was blown away watching him in the game that I saw in LA is it's just how translatable his strengths were. Like, at his age, at 18, he's really unselfish. His pull-up shooting is really impressive. He's got deep range. He'll hit ahead in transition. He's not a crazy athlete, but again, his passing sort of helps cover the space that his body maybe doesn't, right? So, all these things. I mean, if I was going to draw a comparison, I don't think it's that lazy. I mean, his style of play is basically like Trae Young, except if Trae Young were 6'6 or 6'7. So, is he in the mix for number one? Absolutely. He might be my number one prospect, honestly, just having seen a lot of these guys at the top of the draft. I guess I'm on the train, for better or worse, until someone takes it from him. I think what he does sort of suits the modern game, and I don't question the talent at all, especially relative to the rest of this draft class.
So there are going to be probably a lot of clips coming out of the NBL of LaMelo this year. I mean, I saw something where the video views of his stuff were like record highs for what's been posted out of the NBL. What should we know about that league? I mean, the numbers that LaMelo puts up over there, I mean, how do we interpret them, based on what that league is?
Yeah, it's competitive. I mean, I think you're seeing more in the quality of the league improve, and more guys are going over there. One of the things that, why it's so appealing to these younger American guys is that, they speak English. It's a shorter season. It ends in, I believe, in March is when their playoffs end. So you can come back and you can train for the draft, and it's not like you're beating yourself up a crazy amount. And I think, I wouldn't expect him to be like the MVP of the league or anything, but, you do have to lend some credence to it. Teams are going over there to scout him. They'll be going all fall, and RJ Hampton as well. I think it's definitely a competitive level. I mean, again, you're playing against guys who are older. I mean, it's hard. I don't necessarily know how to weigh it versus college basketball, right? Because, the bodies are different, speed of the game is different, structure is different, but you get the advantage of, you are a pro, you're going through these pro reps, you're practicing every day, no other distractions. So I think it's a great environment for him to develop, and I think that's ultimately what matters. I wouldn't be like, he's going to average 20 a game, but, just being productive at that age in that league is really impressive and hard to do. No matter who you are. So that's how I'd weigh it. I mean, like, I wouldn't look so much at the stats, and I would just watch and just sort of see, the flashes of talent that he's going to show, because that ultimately is what I think NBA teams are going to draft off.
So Lonzo had a terrific year at UCLA, came out number two overall pick in his draft class. Do you look at LaMelo as being, is he a better NBA prospect than Lonzo?
I think so. Having seen them both at the same age, I saw Lonzo in high school too. This is what I'd say. LiAngelo offensively is just LaMelo is a much more complete player offensively. I mean, he has, this sort of shake and rhythm to him off the dribble to get to his jumper or to get downhill that Lonzo didn't have. He's a really good passer as well. You know, he can hit pocket passes. He can play with ball screens. Great in transition, hitting ahead like Lonzo. But as a scorer, he's much more natural, and he has these things to his game, you know, handling and pulling up around, getting around guys that Lonzo never really had. Now, defensively, Lonzo is a much, much superior player instinctively. You know, Lonzo has always been, you know, very good team defender. I think, you know, Melo is probably behind there, but again, he's 18, so it's just you have to watch for the progress. In terms of offensive upside, much higher. In terms of how much he'll contribute to winning, we'll see. But I think, you know, just even putting him on that same playing field right now says a lot. And you got to remember, I mean, relative to guys his age too. I mean, he's played far and away more professional minutes at whatever, and whether it was Lithuania or whatever, right? I mean, just so many pro minutes already, so many reps that, you know, it's good to see him get results, and it's what he should be getting. So. I mean, I'm just bullish on the situation relative to the rest of this draft. I'm not saying he's going to be a superstar, but I do think there's a pretty good chance that he's a pretty good NBA player.
You know, the other question I had when it comes to LaMelo is that, you know, this guy is a kid that came out, what, after, before his junior year in high school? Is that right? Right? What, did he skipped out after his sophomore year? Is that correct?
I think that's right. I don't remember the exact timeline.
I mean, whenever. He didn't finish high school, basically, and... You know, goes on and plays in a couple of countries, the pro game there. We just saw Darius Bazley skip college, and it worked out for him. He was a first-round pick in this past draft. Is this going to have any impact, you think, on guys going to college when you see Bazley have the success he had? LaMelo could be the number one overall pick. Do you look at these as aberrations or potentially a trend?
You know, I think you will see, you know, assuming that Melo and RJ Hampton are both, you know, top five, top 10 picks, which, you know, I think is probably, I would say likely looking at the draft right now, as well as we can forecast it. I mean, certainly that does create an opportunity for guys to, you know, show there's a pathway to going over there if you're ready, you know, to go over, produce, you know, get showcased adequately, you know, get drafted and get better. I'm going to stop short of saying it's going to be like a flood of departures for two reasons. One, I think one and done is going to change in the next few years. You know, when we'll see, people think, you know, 2022 draft will be two draft classes. So, you know, when that changes, there's not going to be so much reason for these guys to go do that. I mean, if you can go straight to the NBA, you're going to do it. But I think it does speak to the viability of it. You know, Mitchell Robinson, another guy, you know, who took off a year, you know, these alternate pathways, because ultimately, you know, NBA teams are drafting off potential. It helps to have a, you know, a nice sample size. Just even a full freshman season is still a useful point of comparison relative to history. And if you're doing the analytics and running it, you know, you can see the differences there. But at the end of the day, they're drafting off what they see, what the upside is, what the background is on the player, you know, what habits the player has already. So it really is kind of a case-by-case thing. And that's sort of how I feel about it. I mean, it's, you know, each guy is different. There's a different route for everyone. And I do think there are still a lot of kids who do grow up, you know, wanting to play college basketball, whose parents are, you know, want them to play college basketball and see the value in that.
What's LiAngelo doing these days? He's still playing somewhere?
I have no idea. I actually have no idea. He's kind of fallen off the map. But, I mean, he wasn't going to be an NBA player anyway, so I don't know.
I agree, which makes it even crazier that he, you know, left UCLA. I mean, yeah, I always said that he should have become like, you know, finish college and become like an agent, or maybe not even finish college. You don't have to finish college to become an agent, but, you know, been like the Cooper Manning of the family, for lack of a better comparison. Just, you know, someone that could run the big baller brand agency aspect or something. But, you know, who knows? I mean, that always seemed like they got a little reckless with LiAngelo's career.
Yeah, I mean, I assume he'll be good. I hope, but yeah, as of now, not really a trace in the public eye.
Not going to be a first round pick, I guess, as no. Lamar once promised. Okay, Jeremy, always appreciate it, man. Good stuff. Look forward to talking again as we get a little closer, a little deeper into this draft process, man. Thanks for joining me.
Always, thanks, man.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.